from Mimeo Field at Harry Grove Stadium. This is Unlocking the Keys.
You know what time it is? It's time for Unlocking the Keys, the official podcast of Frederick Keys Baseball. You can find us on all major podcast platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media as well, at Frederick Keys. I'm Gareth Kwok, the radio broadcaster for the Keys this summer. This is episode 4 of Unlocking the Keys, and we're going to be featuring not one, but two second-half Frederick Keys players. My guests for today's episode are two infielders who are not from the East Coast and may have attended different schools, but they're very close friends playing together for the second straight summer. The first baseman from the University of Utah, Alex Baeza. Alex, how's it going, man?
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And then the shortstop from the University of Evansville, Evan Berkey. Evan, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Glad to be here.
Hey, thanks for joining me. First question, because, you know, usually how summer ball works, it's kind of you get your one summer, you get your teammates, and you kind of, it's like one and done. You don't know whether you'll see each other again, but could you have imagined, hey, the same team in the same summer for the second straight year?
No, I couldn't have. We've kind of had a weird story, too. We've been kind of around the same summer leagues 4 years in a row, just bouncing around, just missing each other. And then Mankato last year was the first time we played together. And just randomly, I showed up here a week left of the first half. And Berkey saw my Snapchat story that I was here. And he's like, no shot, you're there. I'm coming in 4 days. So just kind of dumb luck. But, yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, just a beautiful coincidence, man. You know, you get to play baseball with one of your best buddies over the last couple of years, and it's easy to come to a spot right away to kind of like be yourself once you first get here because you got a couple guys you already know. But yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, yeah, let's back things up because that's that last summer we're talking about the Mankato Moondogs in the Northwoods League. How was it playing for Mankato last year?
Mankato's awesome. Berkey would know better than I would. He was there for 2 years. I was just there last year, but it felt like a lifetime. We had the most fun summer. I mean, we got the most out of our time off the field and on the field. Our team was just disgusting. We went out there and just won every game, it felt like. But yeah, it was a good time, just a lot of good guys, and the dogs were hot.
Dogs are hot. But, yeah, going back, because I was there a year before Alex and then got there the next year, but Matt Wallenzen was the head coach. He's now one of my really good friends. Got to keep him around my life. Pretty good mentor as well, but very, very easy to play down there. Not much pressure on you. It is summer ball, so it is loose and easy, but Matt kind of made it really easy to go down there and just have some fun.
Hey, I saw some of the names on that roster last year. There are some guys that you had there. Jacob Wilson from Grand Canyon. He's a All-American shortstop. Played for Team USA this past year. Justin Boyd from Oregon State. He just got drafted in the second or third round by the Reds. And then Adam Fogle from the University of Kentucky, who is also your former Hawaii teammate as well. And now he plays for Mahoning Valley here in the draft league. You guys had some guys on that team.
Yeah,
huh?
We had those guys. And then also Matt Higgins is one of the pure hitters I've ever seen on a baseball field. Yeah. Went to Bellarmine University. That guy's got the single season and all-time home run record at his school. Was an All-American this year, and he just got his contract with the Giants. Yep. But that just top to bottom, you could go up down that roster, and you'd see some guys out there, like Vince Riley.
Vince.
Guy's 5'9", throwing 97 miles an hour.
Luke Young.
Yeah, everybody on that team. It was honestly insane to just show up every day and see people work. It was crazy to see that day in and day out. It was awesome. It was like a little summer of Pro Bowl, a little minor league summer.
Pretty much. It's cool to see because you don't know what you're going to get into. And then this year's draft, and then you see all these people go, you're like, oh, my goodness. Like, I didn't realize what you were around at the time until after it happens. But, yeah, it was awesome to show up every day with that type of talent.
And how funny is it that Fogle now is in Mahoning Valley, and also he was teammates with Hunter Jump and Jake Plastiak, man.
We were talking about it not too long ago, how insanely small the baseball world is. Like, there's so many people you go in and out. Like, just talking to people at first base throughout the games, just, like, oh, you went to Kansas, you know this guy. You went to Texas, you know this guy. It's like, oh, I grew up with that guy. And it's like everyone knows each other. Everyone's close-knit. And it's just, like, random. Like, kids from New Jersey will know, like, my best friend from California. It's just the weirdest, just a small, tight-knit community. And it's awesome being out here. But, yeah, I'm excited to see Fogel again today. And, yeah, it's crazy. We got put up with his two teammates this last year. And it's been just, like Berkey said, an easy transition, easy to come in every day and play.
Yeah.
Now, did you two know each other at all prior to Mankato?
Not really, no. Like, if someone were to ask me, like, oh, do you know Alex Bayes? I'm like, oh, yeah, that was a first baseman from Hawaii. But we just, I mean, I do kind of own Hawaii a little bit, so I was on the bases quite often. So we got to chit chat about.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm pretty talkative at first base. And
yeah, you're not one of those guys to shut people out on first
base. No, I get bored out there. I get lonely at first base. I've been talking to the umpire, first base coach, anyone who gets on, and we couldn't keep Berkey off the bases, so I got to know him pretty well, pretty quick. We would just talk about dumb stuff like tattoos, what he was seeing, how the pitcher was throwing that day, just what he did last night, just kind of making the game move along a little quicker. And after him just tearing up Hawaii 2 years in a row, I got to know him pretty good. And then we ended up in Mankato, and that was basically like you kind of know him already, and then you just start to hang out with him off the field and really get to know him. So it was easy transitioning into a friendship, but for the most part, it was just like he was always just destroying us, but he was cool when he was on the bases, so I would talk to him.
So how did you do in that series? You remember?
I think
you said two. You said you played them twice, right?
Yeah. So we went up there sophomore year. I don't really remember much from sophomore year, but it was another coincidence too. An old news broadcaster from Palm Desert was working there, and then he moved to Hawaii to do the news down there. So he kind of got to do a little story on me after the first year, kind of just saying how we both knew each other, and then coming up to Hawaii and playing well. But then the next year, I think I hit maybe, I think, 500 on the weekend with four doubles. And I was playing all over the field, too. I think I DH'd the first game, played second the next game, then ended up in right field the last game. But, yeah, that pretty good series for me.
Pretty good series, right?
Yeah.
So let's go back. First interaction, kind of how do you remember it all played out when he's at first base?
Well, first interaction actually was this guy hits a double off the wall. And so what I would do at Hawaii was just, like, I hated, like, the coaches would do their slow jog or walk out to the pitchers to grab the shin guards and elbow guards. So I'd always tell the guys, like, just hand me your shin guard. I'll run it over to your coach. Let's get it going. And this guy runs to second, and you know how teams do their double celebration, whatever it is.
This guy
faked a pulled hammy as I'm, like, reaching for his shin guard, and then just starts twerking in my face. And I was like, oh, screw this guy. I turned around, walked away. So originally when we got to Mankato, I was like, no way this Berkey kid's on my team. I hate this kid. And then after, like, one day of practice, we went out, and I was like, okay, this guy's kind of funny. Like, after that, I looked back and I was like, okay, the whole twerking thing was kind of funny. But like in the moment, this kid had been tearing us up all for 2 years, and he had another double and just twerked in my face. I was like, I hate this kid. But yeah,
hey, you hate the ones that are good though, right? You know?
Yeah, you love to hate them.
You love to hate them.
Yeah. You hate them on the other team, but you love them on the same team.
Yeah.
So that was the Universal Cal State Bakersfield double celebration, or that was just you?
That was me and my buddy Tyler Jorgensen. He was a utility guy and ended up playing first our second time in Hawaii, but. Yeah,
that was how I went down. Well, I mean, what was the moment then that, I guess, I don't know if it was maybe during that series or at Mankato where you guys really started to kind of connect, and it's more than just, hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
Definitely. My bad. But in Mankato, for sure, because we're with each other every day. And I don't know, did you guys have a car in Mankato?
I did not. No, Cole did. One of the other guys from Hawaii, Cole Kaler, he was at A&M this year. He had a truck, so I would just catch rides with him, but for the most part, whenever we needed a ride, Berkey was there. And then, like you said, Walenzin, he knew Coach Walenzin, and then J-Mo, who was at Evansville. And funny enough, my freshman year at Hawaii, I faced him When did where you? Did he go?
UCR.
Riverside. Yeah, he went to UCR. I faced him. He was their Friday guy. I faced him as a freshman his senior year, and then end up playing for him. So it was just the whole summer lined up. Like we had a lot of guys from the Big West, Pac-12, like California guys in the middle of Minnesota. So it was really comfort. It was just the strangest thing. Just everything lined up perfectly for just the most comfortable summer, and everything just there wasn't ever like an awkward like first week or anything. It just kind of seemed like everything just flowed right into season. It was a comfortable transition, and everyone. Yeah. It was like a close family from the start.
Yeah. And you don't really get that often. Mm-mm. In summer ball. I was fortunate. I'm sure Alex is fortunate enough too, but you know, going to Rochester, Minnesota, we both played there. My time there with Thomas Walker.
Yeah.
And then J-Mo, the guy that not the guy, but the coach that we both played for he coached me there my first year in the Northwood, so I've always kind of had a really good start to summers to kind of get comfortable, but once we got to Mankato, it was just right away. It didn't take a week or two.
Yeah,
got our icebreakers out the first day, and then played a couple games, won them, and then we just started bombing. Yeah.
So did you drive all the way from California to?
I sure did.
So how long is that drive?
That took me almost 25 hours, 26 hours. From,
wow.
Because I went.
Where'd you
stop? So my first year in the Northwoods League, I flew. And then I drove back with the coach.
Okay.
And then my second year, I drove to Texas first and got some at-bats in the Palm Springs Collegiate League.
Yep.
But they had to move it because of COVID to Texas. Because Texas didn't have any boundaries.
Yeah, no restrictions at that time.
So I went there for about a week and a half. Got a couple at bats and then went from Texas to Minnesota. And that was like a 15-hour and then a 13-hour, so like 28 hours.
So were you kind of, I guess, the tour guide for the first when he came for that one summer? And because you had already been there one summer, it was going to be your second summer.
Yeah,
you're kind of showing them around, showing the ropes.
There were actually a lot of guys. There were a lot of guys who had been there previous years. So there was even guys that like neither of us really knew before. They had been there a year or two before. Kind of somewhere around Minnesota, they knew Mankato was a good spot, so they would always go back. So it was a good core group of like guys who had been there before, and then the majority of us who were, it was the first time there, it was just so easy to get comfortable and just get after the work and not really have that awkward phase because there were so many guys who knew the area, they knew what it was like, and they just showed you what there was to do around there, how they go about their business. And Mankato's field and the locker room and everything.
Money.
It's a nice turf field, nice locker room, nice clubhouse. Got a PlayStation in there, so like it's super comfortable. A great place for like if you show up early, all the guys are just messing around, having fun. So it's a super laid back, fun place to be.
Yeah, and so as far as Northwoods League baseball, because it is like a grind. Like it's considered to be one of the
grindy.
Like one of those leagues where you only get maybe two or three off days a month.
Oh yeah.
Is it as advertised as when you see on the schedule?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's 72 games in 75 days.
72 games in 75.
It'll make you rethink your decision to play college baseball. Yeah. You'll be fighting some demons throughout game 55, 56. But it's awesome. If you got that good group of guys and the coaches who make it fun to be there every day. It's a blast. Yeah. It does fly.
Having fun.
It's a grind, but once you get really close to those guys and showing up every day, seeing all those cool little towns and old school parks, it flies. And then you look back, you're a fifth year senior, not with no summer ball left. And you're like, I wish I could go back for one more.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, at least that schedule, I mean, if you can play 72 games in 75 days, you can do anything, right? Basically, draft league here, you guys are playing six games a week. Implies, you know, you guys get at least a couple off days a month. Every Monday has been an off day, so this is probably nothing for you guys, really.
Yeah,
right?
It's been fun. I mean, Berkey's playing every day at short. I've mixed in a couple DHs, a couple days off, but I mean, I feel like I could go six days a week and then make it to Monday on the off day. But I mean, that's what everyone here trains for. We're all training to get that contract, go play pro ball, and when you do that, you're playing every day. So you got to put your body through the gauntlet in the off season training for this stuff, so that you're not shell shocked when you come out here.
Yeah, I know. I know he gets the the luxury of maybe getting some DH days. You've been playing short the entire summer so far. You feeling all right?
Yeah, we're doing good. Yeah. You know, you take your ibuprofens and drink a lot of water and go get some decent rest if you can, and then get up and do it again. But I love playing every day because once you get in a groove, it's hard to get taken out of it. And then once you finally, you know, maybe start slowing down a little bit, you'll get an off day or something to, you know, kind of just take a step back from the game a little bit, watch it from the sidelines, chirp a little bit, yeah, and get back in there next day.
We talked a little bit about the Northwoods League, but you guys also spent one summer each in the Alaskan Baseball League, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So I just out of curiosity, kind of what was the team you guys played for? What was that like to play in Alaska?
So, yeah, I'll go first. I played for the Peninsula Oilers.
Okay.
Very interesting little area.
Okay.
It's tight, very small. It's like it's called the well, obviously it's a peninsula, so it's a little tiny island, like, mm-hmm, very tiny. I had a good time though, because I got to ride some ATVs and go on, like, what we did was we took a rope, tied it on the ATV, tied it up to like a sled, and then once it started raining, we got to go like mud sledding and stuff, and then we got to go fishing. We wear the waders, get about, yeah, you know, waist deep in the water, and I, yeah, got to experience one of the coolest, most American thing in my life. I was fishing, and a bald eagle comes swooping down into the water and picks a fish right out of the water and flies back into its nest. I got to witness it right in front of my face.
One swoop,
no bobbles, clang clang, and he picked it up and went all the way back up in his tree. It was amazing.
Give him the gold.
Give him the gold.
Hey, I mean, is it true you guys play at like 9 p.m., 10 p.m. first pitch?
We had a midnight game.
Yeah. Midnight?
Started at midnight, midnight,
No lights.
Yeah, you'll lose your mind out there.
Yeah.
It's different. But, yeah, so he played in for the Oilers, and I played for the Anchorage Glacier Pilots. And that's kind of a bigger city. It's like,
yeah,
that's in where Anchorage, you fly into, right? Yeah, in Anchorage. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot more stuff there. There's like nice little like hikes. There's the oceans right behind the field. There's a bunch of rivers. I lived in my host family was in Eagle River. It's an amazing house. No neighbors, no yard. Yeah. It was right up against the river. You'd wake up, go out to the patio in the morning, have your cup of coffee or whatever.
Yeah.
Just look out in the backyard. There'd be moose and black bears walking around. But yeah.
What's weather at that point? Like
65, 70? Yeah.
It has its days, though, where it'll get a little humid and hot.
Yeah.
But for the most part, Alaska kind of
65, 70.
Yeah, stayed, yeah, cloudy.
Wow.
But yeah, there was one time I was a couple guys on the team went to go see Toy Story. It was like Toy Story 4 or 3. I don't know, whatever, yeah, one that was coming out at the time. But we go watch it at midnight, come back out at like 3 in the morning. It's still sunny, kind of looks like sunset. And I had a long driveway, kind of, yeah, like the movie Get Out, if you've ever seen that, like, okay, a long secluded driveway. They, yeah, dropped me off at the bottom of the street. I'm walking up and I'm tired. It's like 3 in the morning. And I look up, and between me and the garage door, like 20, 30 feet apart, was a huge black bear just staring at me. And I had no idea what to do. And the funny part is day one, your host family gives you bear spray. They're,
oh,
like,
really?
Oh, if you ever get in the middle of like an altercation with a bear, have your bear spray on you. And I'm from Utah. I was like, why do I need bear spray? I'm never going to see a bear out here. Get out there. And I immediately reached for the bear spray. And I was like, yep, it's by my bed. And so then I just sat there for like 5 minutes. It just stared at me, kind of sniffed around a little bit and walked away. And I,
wow,
sprinted inside, and I'd never been so scared in my life. But yeah, that was the most terrifying moment of Alaska. But it was cool. We'd go on a bunch of hikes. I got to go deep sea fishing with my host,
yeah,
dad. Got some salmon. He grilled it up that night. But yeah, it was a cool experience. I loved playing in Alaska.
How do you guys get around? Because all you guys have to fly, right? So
yeah,
I mean, is it a lot of host families doing it, or they kind of have?
Yeah. So in Alaska, actually, the team that, I don't know if the Oilers did it, but when we got there were like 5 or 6 team cars.
Oh,
they're like team vans.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
okay,
we had like team minivans, and there was. So I actually went to that summer with three. There were 3 of us from Hawaii there, so we all had the same host family, and we had our own minivan, and we lived the furthest from the field. So we had our own minivan, and we would just take it to the field and back every day. And then you just had to pay for your gas. But the most part, it was a free car for the summer. Your host family would grill you up great food. Mm-hmm. We'd go to Costco 2 times a month and stock up whatever you wanted. So it was great. But, yeah, you never had to worry about a car. They paid for your flights out there. Yeah, it was really awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. And you had a team van also in Peninsula, right?
We did, yeah. We only had one, though.
Only one?
So we would have to – I was the furthest away. No, I'm lying. I'm like the second or third pickup, so
– yeah.
They would take the van, just one of them. His name was Justin Jaime. He would pick everybody up, carpool to the field. The van didn't have a speaker system, so we had a JBL speaker.
JBL speaker, yeah.
Pick everybody up, made it work, and then go to the field.
Hey, I didn't know you guys both have had some experience on the mound. At least Berkey, you threw one inning in Mankato last summer. Is that right?
I threw 3 innings.
Really?
I threw one in the regular season, and then I had to go to a wedding. Went to the wedding for a week, come back, we're in playoffs. And I show up and hop on the mound for playoffs and throw 2 innings.
How'd you do those 2 innings?
Did great. Did great.
Did great?
Competed.
All right, competed? Alex, how was your pitching back in the day?
I mean, I was recruited by Hawaii as a two-way. So okay. My first 2 years, I did all the stuff in the fall, like all the flat grounds, bullpen, long toss, arm care, everything. I'd throw in inner squads. I was never a fan of pitching because whenever you're a two-way, they always tell you have time for both. But whenever it's time to go run poles, it's normally during BP, and I hate missing BP. So I'd always have to like throw my bullpen or do my arm care, rehab, whatever during BP, and I would lose my mind. But I got one outing my freshman year against Cal Poly. I think we were down like 16-4 or something. They were like basically get out there. I think I walked the bases loaded, and then I struck out the side to get out of it. So I always tell the pitching staff whenever I get a chance that I had the lowest ERA in the nation my freshman year. So I always tell them, like, it can't be that hard. Like, just get out there, just dominate. I did it.
Yeah, I mean, it's your numbers are on Baseball Reference. I got your numbers here.
Two-thirds of an inning, runs.
We're combining the Hawaii and the summer ball numbers because, let's be real, it's sort of a short sample size. Yeah, so we kind of have to combine both of them here. You threw 7 2/3 innings. You have an ERA of 7.04.
I threw 7 innings?
That's what Baseball Reference is. I'll show you later.
Did you throw in summer ball?
Did I throw in? I think I threw in Rochester.
Seven strikeouts. You walked 8 guys. Your last appearance was in 2019.
And, yeah, that was Rochester.
The 2018 summer in Rochester, the walks and the earned runs were a little.
Yeah,
in
Rochester. I forgot. I threw in Rochester. I hadn't. That was right after at Hawaii. They told me I didn't have to two-way anymore. And then it was like 30 games in Rochester. We had no arms. And they threw me out there for 2 innings, and they were like, T-Walk. T-Walk threw me out there. He said, just throw it up there 60 miles an hour. And I don't even know what happened. I don't know if I guess I must have walked a bunch of guys.
Walked the house and then gave up a knock or something.
Gave up one knock probably after walking the bases loaded. But, yeah, summer ball doesn't matter, man. college, I got a 0 ERA.
There you go.
In the Big West Conference, I didn't give up a run. That's all that matters.
Two-thirds of an inning. Two-thirds of an inning, 3 walk. What, 3 walks?
3 walks, 2 Ks.
There you go.
No runs.
No runs.
That's how it's done right there.
So that's a 0 ERA.
That's a 0. That's a big donut right there. That'll get you into the hall.
We got my baseball reference on there.
I think so. Everybody's got their Baseball Reference out there.
Well, yeah, I know the hitting part, but I've never checked my innings on the mound.
The summer ball, they usually have your summer ball stats on there too. So we'll have to check them out after.
Have to pull that up.
So what I'm hearing is that if we run out of arms on this Keys team, you guys are ready to go.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I don't know what my strike percentage will be. I don't know if Dennis would like that very much. But I'll go up there and I'll dominate that rubber.
Okay.
You'll feel the presence.
All right. Well, hey, let's talk a little bit your spring seasons because you guys both sort of did the opposites of one another. You went back home from Hawaii to Utah.
Yep.
You meanwhile went from home to Indiana to the University of Evansville. But no, just from seriously though, I mean, kind of what led to your decision making to kind of finish out your college careers the way you wanted to.
Okay, so to start, when we both played in Minnesota, I was cool. We were both coached by, wait, you weren't, that's a lie. I was coached by Kyrs Kimball. He was one of the pitching coaches at Evansville.
Yep.
And when I first got there, we just clicked right away. And then I played with about five Evansville players on that Moondogs team. Tanner Craig, Danny Borgstrom, forgot the rest, but we're good. But that kind of got my foot in the door for Evansville. So, yeah.
That's you wanted to be part of the brotherhood there.
Absolutely. It was special. It was special. I got to go to Evansville and almost win a Missouri Valley Conference championship. Yeah. So we definitely got to exceed our goal that we had. So, yeah.
Are you satisfied with how it played out for your final year? I mean, considering the circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, I'm satisfied. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun, made a lot of memorable friendships down there. I wouldn't trade it for the world. But we would have liked to take home that championship.
How was the weather the first couple of games in February?
Tough. Fortunately, we got to open up at NC State, so it was 70 degrees and sunshine.
Okay.
But then after that, we went to Vanderbilt.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was 25 degrees, raining. The worst game I've ever been playing in my whole entire life. I was playing, I was at third, just standing there shivering, trying to move around as much as possible. And then the more I move around to stay warm, the more the fans start chirping me because they're right there. They're chirping me, oh, you're too cold, California boy, too cold, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, wow, so those Vandy fans get on you.
Ruthless.
Huh?
Also, there's no foul territory there.
Zero.
Like,
so
the bleachers are 4 feet from the foul line.
On you.
There's no foul territory.
I'm surprised, though, because 25 degrees and raining, you'd think there wouldn't be that many fans. But, Vanderbilt,
they're built different.
They got the big name, and the fans are loyal, I guess. And they had a fun time chirping me out there.
It's a nice field there, though, right?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Nice turf.
Yeah, I got to play there the COVID year, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, 2021 or 2020?
What was it, 2020?
2020.
The COVID year, yeah. Short season.
2020.
Yeah, 2020. Yeah.
We went there
2020,
like
2021 season.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how about you because 4 years at Hawaii and then coming back home to Utah?
Yeah. So last year at Hawaii, I was having a pretty good season, and then with about 3 weeks left, I tore my hamstring. So I was rehabbing that. I was able to somehow play my senior day. Somehow I was able to play, could barely run to first. Like mostly one legged. I could not run to first base, but
really?
I played that day, and then I was rehabbing for like 5 weeks at home, and I was like, I don't know if I wanna do my last year somewhere. I had already moved everything out of Hawaii.
Oh,
and then my leg started feeling a little better. I was like, I don't feel like I'm done yet. Like, I want to go back, see what I can do. So I went to Mankato, and I hit the transfer portal as a grad transfer. And just kind of looking around, seeing what I was doing, and had a couple options. But it was actually J-Mo, who was our coach. He was one of the guys who was at Evansville. He was our pitching coach. And I kept telling him about all the other schools I was thinking about. And he's like, why not Utah? Because they had been talking to me for a while. And he told me straight up, he's like, it just seems like you're finding a reason not to go home. Like, Utah makes so much sense, and it just seems to me like you're trying to find a reason that makes sense for you not to go home. And after he said that, I kind of sat back and thought, and I was like, that's some deep stuff from J-Mo there.
That's facts.
And then also with Utah, Coach Henderson, the head coach there, this was his first year as the head coach. My assistant coach at Hawaii, Mike Brown, he's like family. I love that guy. He played for Hendu at Kentucky, and then he coached under him at Mississippi State before he went to Hawaii. And he had nothing but good stuff to say. So I was like, if this guy vouches for him, I got to go play for him because I love playing for this guy. I want to see who basically made him as a coach. So I went and played for him. And then 2 weeks later, after I commit, Brown gets the assistant job. He's a recruiting guy at Utah. So we both went over together, and we did our last year at Utah together. And it was awesome, man. I loved being home. The toughest part was the weather. I mean, I was in Hawaii for 4 years, and then
go back to
your training in the snow all Christmas break. But then the nice part was the first month of season we were in California.
You're traveling. You're going to SoCal all the time.
Yeah, for the first month of season, we didn't have a home game, which was nice. But even still, there'd be some midweek games at home or at Utah Valley or BYU that were just miserable.
Utah Valley.
And I don't know what it is. I got this weird thing where I can't wear long sleeves. Like, I don't know why. No, I can't do it. I don't know if it's a mental thing. Like, if I'm wearing long sleeves, I feel like it's too cold. I don't know. Up top in the mind. But I would just sit there and just freeze with no sleeves on, and everyone would think I was crazy. And I was like, no, if I put sleeves on, then I start thinking that it's cold. So, like, I just don't throw sleeves on. I'll just freeze and just sit by the heater in between innings. But there were some tough games early in the year.
Was that the cold? What's the coldest game? Is that Vandy game the coldest game?
Absolutely.
The coldest game I've ever played in was, I think it was my junior year. We went to Ohio State in February. Why would Hawaii go to Ohio State in February? Why not just make it I don't know. But it was like 10 degrees and it snowed during BP, and like the whole first two, three innings it was snowing. Miserable. That was the worst game I've ever played in that whole weekend. We were in Columbus, Ohio, like the last week of February, and I don't think it got above 20 degrees.
I'm pretty sure there's a rule though for like temperature wise.
Yeah, we were close to the I think it's like under 18 or 17 degrees. It's the NCAA doesn't let you play, and we had just barely hit the mark. But I hated playing there, but I think I'm the mayor of Columbus after that series though. I had a great series out there. Yeah. So maybe I should go back. Just play in the cold all year.
Do you guys wish that you were college teammates, or you think just summer ball is kind of the way it should be?
I don't know.
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
If we were in college together, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be some bad news. If we got that Mankato team at the same school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what would be going on out there, man.
A lot of fun. Okay, so maybe it's a good thing you guys are just summer ball teammates and not.
Yeah,
not
I mean, I also feel like if we were at school together, we'd know like this is a time like we can go out with a day off or something.
Time and a place.
There's a time and a place. Yeah, you guys are still professionals about it. This is what you're here to do. But just being able to just let everything hang out in the summer, like you can go out all night if you want to, and you'll figure out a way to do it at the yard. But like if we were at school and it was Thursday night, we're going out, and then we got UCLA or something Friday night. It's like you can't be doing that. Yeah, but I feel like we both knew that. But I'm glad we got to do it in the summer, because then you really get to see what everyone's like, and no pressure of like really trying to like win conference, go to a regional. Like, you're just out there, you're getting your reps, you're working on your game, but you can blow off some steam in between.
So spring 2022, you guys finish out your seasons. Did you guys have any plans for the summer as far as summer baseball goes? I know you were back in your hometown playing for Palm Springs.
Yeah,
right?
So what had happened was right after season, I knew that I wanted to play baseball. Even if I didn't get drafted, if I didn't get signed, I'd want to go play somewhere. So a team in Montana, the Glacier Range Riders, ended up calling me about a week after season. And I haven't heard anything from the draft league, nothing. I wanted to come to the draft league. So I kind of just kept my options open with that team. And then fortunately the MLB draft league, Sean Campbell, we got the email, ended up signing that email right away, locked it down, went home, got a couple ABs from the local summer team, and then flew out here. So I knew what I was going to be doing. I didn't know I was going to play for my local summer team though. So I didn't know if I can do that or not, if it was legal. With the terms and the contract and all that stuff, but it ended up working out. Got the reps in, and then we flew out here.
And then for you, right? Because you showed up about a week or two earlier than he did.
Yeah. So once season ended, I kind of knew I was setting something up to come out to the draft league, but I didn't know when it was gonna be. So I was just working out every day with our strength coach at Utah, and then I'd go hit on my own, take ground balls. My little brother's the team manager for Utah.
Danny, right?
Yeah, Danny. So he would go out, he'd front toss me, he'd feed the machine, hit me fungos, just keeping me right. And then it ended up being like 4 or 5 weeks of that, just waking up, going to lift, going to hit. And then I finally got the call from Sean, and I was originally supposed to go to Trenton for the second half. And then he he told me that I guess it was Plastiak was leaving. Frederick had a couple infielders leaving, yeah. So he said, "What if I just send you there? You can come out a week or two early, and then we'll just leave you there for the second half." And I was like, "That's fine with me. I'll just get some extra reps." And within 24 hours, I had my flight. I flew out to New Jersey overnight and caught a train that morning, a two-hour train from Newark, New Jersey to Baltimore. And then Savannah, our liaison, picked me up, drove me here for the last home game. And I hadn't slept in like 10 hours, hadn't eaten since like 5 o'clock the night before. And I just sat here, watched the last home game. We went straight to Williamsport, and I played the next day.
Love that.
Six game road trip that we went on there.
Yeah, I was there for six games. I've only played like four games at home so far.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he's gotten like every time we've seen him out here, it's been on the road, basically.
Yeah.
He's gotten like a couple home games. But then, because, I mean, he's here a week or two earlier, and had you known that, hey, are you going to the draft league? Like, I'm going to the draft league.
So
no. How did it all of a sudden click that we're playing the same team?
It was when we were in Trenton. They had a photographer who took some pictures of me, tagged me on Instagram. So I put it on my story. He saw the Frederick logo and he said, "There's no shot you're in the draft league right now."
Yeah. So
I was like, "Yeah, I got here 2 days ago." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm coming out in 4 days."
Yeah. So I saw that. I saw the Instagram or the Snapchat, wherever he posted it. And I was like, "All right." Because at the time, I didn't know where I was going to be. And I was kind of getting a little frustrated.
Well, yeah.
Just because I kind of wanted to line out my, you know, my travel situation.
Yeah.
So my mom's on me every day, like, "Where are you going to go? Where are you going to go? Like, do you know where you're going? Like, have they called you yet? Have they emailed you yet?" I'm like, "No, mom. It's a process." Like,
some moms are.
That's
freaking out, making sure everything's
They want to make sure things are okay. I'm just like, "No, like, it's not." And then finally, I just kind of was like, "All right, whatever. I'm calling Beza." He ended up giving me the Sean Campbell's phone number, and then I texted him. I was like, "Hey, you have any idea about where I'm going to be? I kind of want to line my stuff up." He's like, "Yeah, you're in Frederick. Like, you didn't know that?" And I was like, "No, but great to thank you. Awesome." And then I called Alex and I was like, "Yo, you're not going to believe this, dude. You're not going to believe this."
And you're on the line, so when you hear it, "I'm coming to Frederick, man."
Yeah. And then so right after he called me, I called Fogle.
Yeah.
And I was, because I knew he was coming to the draft, like, he hadn't heard yet. And I was like, "Dude, Berkey's coming to Frederick.
We got to get you to Frederick, dude.
Like, we got to work this out." And then I guess that night he heard he had been sent to Mahoning Valley.
Yeah.
Oh, and I was like, "Oh, dude, we got to trade somebody. Like, we got to make this happen." But no, and then our first road trip of the second half, we go to Mahoning Valley and we're hanging out with Fogle. So it's been cool. But we'll get to see him tonight in the next couple days. Get to catch up a little bit.
Yeah.
But
we'll have to consider maybe some pick swaps here.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Yeah, we'll get some pictures in there.
Yeah, there you go. Or I was saying for trading, you know.
Yeah,
oh,
let's trade.
My bad.
No, I mean, that too, sure. Get some pick swaps. We'll throw in the second or third rounder, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Cash considerations, player to be named. No, of course, we're just messing. I mean, anything you guys share in common, like hobbies-wise, as far as, I don't know, game, you guys play video games or whatever, or any of that type of stuff?
We normally do play some video games. The Wi-Fi in the hotel hasn't been the greatest, so we've been working off my hotspot for the most part. But normally our routine is just we get up, we go lift at the Gold's Gym, get some breakfast, and then we just throw on some tunes on the PlayStation after, just slap some music. Way too loud for the hotel room. But it just gets us right, and then we get picked up, go to the field, and just we're just kind of just clowns all day. Like, just keeping it loose, because you get too serious every day. Yeah, it takes a toll.
As soon as you start taking it way too serious, and that's when things start going left and right. You know, you kind of want to. You wake up, slide those blinds open. Oh, yo, you're ready for this. Like, get ready for this. You're ready for this bright light that's about to pierce your eyeballs.
Yeah.
And then we get ready, and
we win the first battle of the day.
We win the first battle of the day.
First battle of the day. You got to make the bets.
Got to make
don't
the
ever
bet.
Let, don't ever let the,
we're not letting the maids
the maintenance ladies. No.
Come on.
Oh, you guys room.
We room together. Yeah. every road trip at home, everything. Yeah.
Oh, and for some reason, I thought some of the for at least here at home, you guys have your own rooms. Nope.
No. So we don't have a car, so we're in the hotel.
Okay.
So then we just get rides from other guys. But we're together in the hotel room, and it's been kind of a competition of who wakes up first. You wake up, and you're like, "Damn, Berkey made his bed already. He's got me beat today. He's on it." But we've made it kind of a joke and just a routine of just waking up, win the first battle of the day, get some breakfast, and then we get after it.
Yeah. So, for example, Beza wakes up at like 9:30. I'm still snoozing. Makes his bed. Billy grabs a cup of Joe, gets back in the room. Game time comes around, hits a bomb, right? Mm-hmm. And then we get back to the room. I was like, yeah, so you beat me today, man. Like, you got me, all right? We get it. You beat me, you woke up early, made your bed, and you go out and hit a homer. So I'm going to do that. And then hopefully I hit a bomb. But I mean, we've been making jokes about it. But
yeah, there's been some days where, like, I'll wake up. He woke up for like 10 minutes, made his bed, just laid back on top of the bed made so he can win that
just
first
so
battle.
I can beat that
win that checkbox. It's a win, it's a small win.
You gotta take your small victories and they just add up, and then you go out and you dominate on the
perform.
Field.
Hey, I mean, speaking about, you know, hitting home runs, you guys have hit your first home runs here in the draft league. Mm-hmm. I mean, your impressions of how the league has been, has it been what you expected as far as the competition goes, or in kind of what you would, maybe you thought it would be? I don't know. What were your expectations coming in here? I really didn't have any.
I didn't have any expectation. I'd never been out this far east. I didn't know what the draft league was.
Yeah.
I wanted somewhere to play and an opportunity. And when they called, I was just like, sure, I'm gonna go see what this is all about. But it's been good. For the most part, you try to not worry so much about what's on the other side of the field. You just try and control what you can and go out and just take care of your business, be the best player you can be, and just lock in every pitch of the game. And it's tough sometimes playing 7, 8, 9 games in a row. You can start to lose some focus, and that's the challenging part. And that's when it gets fun, is like when you can realize that, oh, I wasn't really locked in for that pitch. Now I got to find a way to get back into it. Or like today was kind of a struggle, like, talk to Birkin when we get back in the hotel, be like, what can we do different tomorrow so I feel like I'm more prepared and more locked in throughout the game.
Yeah.
So it's cool. You're a professional now. You're taking
you
it.
Are.
You're,
yeah.
This is what you
like,
do.
There's no excuse for anything, honestly. Like, it's a grind. You got to wake up with the same mentality every single day and perform. Because if you don't perform, then you're gone. Like, bottom line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And there's a lot of people that have the same struggles, but they're sitting behind a desk from 9 to 5.
Yeah.
It's like, I can figure it out from here on the field for a couple hours. Like,
yeah.
I'd way rather be struggling trying to figure this out than
playing the game I love
than making 40 calls a day for my income. So,
40 calls a day.
Yeah. I mean, my dad's an insurance agent, so I hear him on the phone all day, and he'd wake me up 8, 9 in the morning, and I'd be like, God, I really don't want to do that. So I'm going to go lift today. I'm going to go hit and see who we can get out of today.
I don't want to do what he's doing,
man. He's working all day on the phone. People yell at him. I'll go try and hit a fastball today.
Papa Beza, I apologize. I apologize.
Yeah, he's going to hear this. He's going to be like, what is he doing up
there? What is my son
flaming
son saying?
Flaming me on the podcast.
Man. Well, hey, before I let you guys go, but I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of another guy's – another thing that you guys share in common, and that's the tattoos, because I mean, for you, you got the sleeve, and then you got it on the forearm too. So just sort of, I guess, I know this is sort of an audio only, but sort of to the best of your description, describe kind of your tattoo and kind of, had you always wanted a tattoo, or like, it's
no,
just kinda...
So for me, I never really wanted a tattoo growing up. And then when I got out to Hawaii, I'd see all the guys, it's almost like religious or something. Like, they take that stuff so seriously, and there's so much thought and time that goes into it. And I would just over time started like just getting obsessed with them and just looking at them and seeing all the different meanings and how they almost tell stories and stuff.
Yeah.
But so for me, the outside of my arm is all kind of religious. I have the roses on the forearm, got the praying hands, a dove. And at the top, I got the cross with the clouds and the sun rays. And then the inside's all Aztec tribal. Yeah, so everyone always thinks I'm Hawaiian because they see the tribal, but it's got some Aztec flow to it, just for the Mexican background. And my parents don't like tattoos, so I'm sure my mom will hear this and she'll be like, "Oh, there he goes again talking about tattoos."
What did mom and dad think when the first time you showed it to them?
So I actually got the two roses on the forearm, and my mom had always said, like, if you ever get a tattoo, I'm gonna burn it off with the iron or whatever. Like, just being old school mom, she didn't want tattoos, and she's like, "But if you do ever get a tattoo, just make sure your sleeves on a shirt will cover it." She's like, "I don't want to see it. Make sure you can get a job or whatever."
Yeah.
So naturally, my first tattoo was on my forearm where I couldn't cover it. And I got it So I came home for Christmas break. I got it the night before I left.
Didn't tell mom.
Showed up after a six-hour flight with a four-hour-long tattoo that covered up half my arm. And she's like, there's no way that's real. Like, she was looking at it. She's like, this is a joke. There's no shot.
Yeah.
And then I go back to school, and she's like, just make sure you don't do any more. And I was like, yeah, mom, I'm done. Like, I'm not doing any more. I got my fix. I'm done. Come back at the end of the season. I got the hole up to my shoulder on the outside done. And she's like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah, but I just had to finish it, mom. I'm done.
I'm done.
I go back in the fall. COVID. I got nothing to do.
I'll just get another tattoo.
I might as well do the inside of my arm. So then I did 16 hours of sessions for the inside of my arm. Yeah.
How much did this cost? The whole thing, roughly.
The whole thing was like $1,500, but Hawaii, we get a lot of per diem for road trips. So we would get $400 for per diem on road trips. Wow. And then my parents would go on the road trips. I'd eat with them, pocket a lot of money.
Yeah.
$300, there's 4 hours for you right there. So I never really paid for anything.
Wow.
It was our AD and our coaches. Thanks a lot, guys. They paid for my tattoos. I never had to do anything for it. But I like it. I don't think my mom's too big of a fan still, but
where was the most painful? What stage was the most painful?
By far on the elbow. The bone on the outside of the elbow. Yeah. That I could feel that just rattling in my teeth. Are they in my jaw?
Because they're just coloring it, right?
The shading didn't hurt me as bad as the lining. Like with the tribal, there's a lot of long straight lines, and that would just feel like they were just cutting holes in your skin. Man. But for the most part, the whole outside of the arm, everything was okay. It was just the inside, right on the elbow, and then right by your armpit, right there. That's soft. Those two were by far the worst for me.
Well, I think both of your tattoos, they look great. I mean, for you, what was the story for how you got yours? Had you always wanted to get one?
Yeah, I've always grew up wanting to get some ink done for sure. Because my mom has a couple tattoos. My dad has a tattoo on his shoulder.
Yep.
Just recently got a new tattoo right here behind his ear. It's pretty sweet. And my cousins I was born and raised in Buffalo, New York. So on my side on the East Coast, they're all tattooed. So I always grew up around that. I was like, oh, I want to get a tattoo whenever I turn 18. So family vacation, went to Buffalo. I was 17 at the time, turned 18, got it right away. I got
what does it say Bible.
I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, Philippians verse 4:13. Got that one for my first one, and then I got a few doves around it to symbolize my grandpa, my grandma, and one of my dad's best friends that passed away, Uncle Jimbo. Mm-hmm. But I got that one first, and then I got an angel on the outside of my forearm. My uncle was in a band, and he was an artist, and he loved to draw. So all my family on the East Coast got a similar replica of his drawing that he drew before he ended up passing away. So got that one. And then on the other side, I got my grandma's initial. And then throughout the forearm, it's kind of just some shading and some clouds and a few stars and stuff like that. But very sentimental to me. I definitely take my tattoos very seriously, and I love them. I can't wait to finish the arm, but I
was just gonna say, you're gonna add on.
Yeah, I got quite a few ideas. I've been storing away for the last few years. So whenever I make the time to save some money instead of spending it, then we'll for sure make some phone calls whenever we go back home.
How much did it cost for
this? This was only $500 for me.
Really.
$500 because I got a deal for the birthday.
Okay.
And then I got another deal. Just some deals, man. they're very generous.
He's got connections.
They threw some deals at me, and I took them. So got to save some money. I think this is, in my eyes, I feel like this is worth way more than $500. But hopefully, the finishing product will stay around that range.
It's funny how your family that has, you know, they have tattoos, and they're like, you know, we fully support. And then we have Alex here.
Yeah,
the opposite here. With the families, maybe a little more hesitant, right?
I think my parents are at least happy that it wasn't just some random drunk tattoo or just on a whim. Like I put my ideas away for seven, 8 months, looked back, and I was like, okay, this is something that I still want.
Yeah.
So then I'd start saving up the money for it.
100%.
Yeah. So at least hopefully my parents are okay with that. That there was some thought into it. It's not just like on a whim, something I'll regret in 5-10 years, but
It's not just
there was some thought that went into it. And
not like a peer pressure tattoo or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the ones you'll regret for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not putting no regrets across my chest.
Tyler Hero.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hey, all right, before I let you guys go, rapid-fire questions. You guys ready?
Let's get it.
I think so.
All right, favorite MLB team?
Yankees.
Dodgers.
Favorite player?
Derek Jeter.
Ooh, favorite player. I don't know if I got one right now. All time. All-time, definitely Griffey.
Yeah,
Griffey.
Mine all-time, Derek
all-time
Jeter.
Griffey.
Right now, we're looking at I like Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
I like him a lot, so that's right.
I like looking at Castellanos.
Okay.
I like his swing. And I like Jesse Winker. I wouldn't say I have like a favorite player, but I like looking at their swings breaking. They're so smooth. I could sit there and get lost on their highlights all day.
Oh, yeah.
Those two guys.
Coolest place baseball has taken you?
Alaska.
Alaska?
LSU.
LSU?
Yeah, I got to play at the box. That
Did
was
you
cool.
really?
Yeah, 16,000 fans.
And with Tiger Stadium in the background.
Oh, yeah.
Too?
Got to see the Tiger walk around campus, everything. That place was cool.
Favorite baseball memory, either something you did in-game or a game you attended?
I hit a home run on Mother's Day last year, and I hit a walk-off base hit on Father's Day this year.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Mine probably, so my freshman year, I hit a walk-off double pinch hit in the ninth.
At Hawaii?
At Hawaii.
Just and watched then, it the other day.
And then probably, you called it last year at ASU.
The home run at ASU?
Opening night, hit a bomb on my little brother's birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
That
was my brother's birthday.
That was your little brother's birthday on that Friday.
You called that?
He called it. I got the video. Yeah, I got to show you later. He called the home run.
Voiceover is Gareth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't know. Yeah, so he. I guess my turn to storytell.
I'm asking the questions now.
No. So he was at Hawaii. I'm at ASU broadcasting baseball. He's at Hawaii for 1 year. He comes to visit Arizona State in 2021. For a three-game series. It was a Friday and then a Saturday doubleheader.
Yeah.
So that's how I first saw Alex in that series. Got to call his – he hit a tank. hit a tank over the ASU bullpen onto, I think, on some construction site.
I think it crossed over to Mexico.
I mean, sure. Yeah, it might have been that way too. And then this year, it's like, oh, Alex Baza transferred to Utah. And when you know, Utah comes to Arizona State, get to call another one of his games. And then here in Frederick, it's like – Alex Baza has been added to the
Small
Frederick
world.
Roster.
That's crazy.
I was like, wow, that name sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah, I feel like we need to just keep this podcast us three now.
It's just our podcast
Have you called anything about me in the past?
Unfortunately not. No. All right, well, favorite food for you guys?
Ooh, favorite food.
I can crush some Polish food, pierogies. And a, I think it's a Filipino dish. It's called, go ahead, Biz. I need to figure this out.
If I'm going out, I'd probably say some nice steak, but Mexican food, mom's home cooking.
Mom's home cooking.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah.
I can't think of it, but pierogies, Polish food.
Pierogies and Polish food. Okay. Any pregame rituals?
Drink a Bang before a game.
All
every
right.
day.
Okay.
Every day, got to drink
Bang.
A Bang.
Bang
get the caffeine.
Okay,
My mom actually sends me like a motivational text before every game.
Does she really?
And if I don't read it, I don't get a hit. So I make sure that I read it and respond to her every day.
I actually, this year, I started, I took a meditation class. And I got a subscription to Headspace. It's a nice little app. It's got 10-minute meditation or like breath work exercises.
Mm.
I started doing that before games this year, and I really like that.
The breath work is insane.
Yeah,
is it really
insane?
Yeah. On an off day, what are you guys doing?
We normally try and get up around the same time so that you can stick to a routine, and then we just go lift in the morning, and then we shoot some hoops.
21.
play a couple games of 21.
Okay.
Get a good sweat in, and then. Find something to watch.
We like to.
We got some ballers out here.
When we get to the field, we always get grounded.
Yeah. Have you seen that video of Matt Carpenter walking around barefoot in the outfield?
We take that very seriously.
I think I saw the other day. Is that what
get
you guys are doing?
No shoes.
No shoes. You feel the earth on the bottom of your feet.
Take a lap around the field, 10, 15 minutes.
That's what I was figuring out what you guys are doing. Are they in the suntan or something?
Getting grounded.
Getting grounded. Mind and body connection at all time high.
All right. Well, hey, thanks so much, guys, for joining. And just as a final thoughts, I mean, any final thoughts on just kind of the friendship with you guys or, like, you know, the time you've had here in Frederick? What's been the most enjoyable part so far about being with this team and just being having this summer? One last summer, really.
I think the fun part about this summer was, there, like we said in Mankato, there was no awkward, like, getting to know each other stage. We had a little bit of that here, and we've just been able to, like, see it slowly, see all the ice break. Everyone's coming out, getting really comfortable with each other. There's a lot of trash talking in the locker room right now, and that's when it gets fun.
That's when it gets fun.
You guys can start talking trash. Like, Berkey and I will be trash talking each other from short to first and, like, when we're hitting and stuff. And then you make it fun, and it's enjoyable, and then now you're more relaxed, and you can go out and enjoy the games.
Yeah.
So, like, right now everyone's starting to get really relaxed and comfortable, and this is where you start to see teams take off and get really close.
Yeah. And to add on to that, like, obviously me and Beza have known each other, and we kind of – have, like, the same hitting routine. We do the same things. We actually just had a FaceTime video call with one of his good friends, Grit, shout out.
Yeah, but Justin Gerardo. Okay.
He got us right, and we do some of the same stuff for our routine. So it's good to have somebody that's kind of on the same program as you. That way you don't have to do everything alone. So it's kind of real nice.
A little accountability partner.
Accountability partner.
Yeah.
I like that. Alex and Evan, thanks so much, man, for joining Unlocking the Keys.
Appreciate it.
We hope to have you back another time.
Thanks for having us.
That's going to do it for episode 4 of Unlocking the Keys with Alex Beza of the University of Utah and Evan Berkey from the University of Evansville. Make sure you follow us on social media at Frederick Keys. But for Alex and Evan, I'm Gareth Kwok saying so long, and we will see you all next time.
Shake them keys, baby.
Yes, sir.